are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday, everybody. Hopefully everyone had a restful weekend. This is my third full week of working from home for my day job. So I'm finally into what feels like somewhat of a routine, which is definitely nice. I don't know how much of a routine it really is compared to what I'm used to, but hey, there's definitely some pros to it. So hopefully everybody else has kind of settled into what they feel like is a routine for them, or at least is staying safe and healthy as much as possible. Today, we're going to open with a few league-wide notes. Off the top, there was a trickle of news related to the league's hiatus over the weekend, as well as some Hall of Fame news. Then we are going to spend the rest of the show, and actually we'll be joining the rest of the shows across the Locked On NBA Network and spending the majority of this week talking about the best Timberwolves seasons in franchise history. There's no mystery, of course, regarding what season that was, but we'll explore a couple of different angles today. I'd like to focus on the roster changes the Wolves made leading into the 2003-2004 season, what Kevin McHale and Flip Saunders and company did to finally improve the cast of characters around Kevin Garnett between, or I guess in the offseason of 2003 leading into the 2003-04 campaign. First, as always, a quick reminder to please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. A quick programming note, we are going to be shifting to three shows per week for the time being as the NBA continues in this hiatus. This week, that's likely going to be today, Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. But my advice would be to subscribe to the pod and keep an eye out. That could shift a little bit. And of course, if there's any major news, we will slip in a fourth podcast at some point during the week as well. So the big news that hit the airwaves on Friday before becoming official on Saturday morning was the final induction list for the 2020 Hall of Fame class. Of course, we knew who was up for the vote a couple of months ago, and it was pretty much a foregone conclusion, at least from the player perspective, who was getting in. But always nice to see this thing become official. So in addition to Kevin Garnett, the class of 2020 includes former players, the late Kobe Bryant and Tim Duncan. So three players who, of course, their careers lined up almost completely along with one another over the course of the mid to late 90s throughout the 2010s and into the last decade, and actually really into the middle of the last decade for all three of those guys. The class also includes the four-time National Coach of the Year college coach Eddie Sutton, Rudy Tomjanovich, the coach, of course, 10-time WNBA All-Star, four-time Olympic gold medalist Tamika Catchings, Kim Mulkey, the three-time NCAA National Championship coach from Baylor, five-time D2 National Coach of the Year Barbara Stevens, and then longtime FIBA executive Patrick Bauman are all part of this class. The enshrinement isn't until August. It looks like August 28th is the enshrinement festivities, with the actual celebratory events taking place on the 29th, with a second day of events, community events, on August 30th. So we're a little ways out from that actually happening. There's been some fun debate about what's the best Hall of Fame class ever inducted together in terms of at least players, which are a little easier, more quantifiable to measure the players within a class. There's an article on ESPN from Kevin Pelton, and I don't believe it was an insider or an ESPN Plus article. I think it was free to everybody. And Pelton had come up with a metric called championships added. I think it championships added or championships earned or something like that. And according to that metric, this is the second best class ever, trailing only the Michael Jordan, David Robinson, John Stockton class from, when was it? I don't know, the mid 2000s. The way that those players were ranked in terms of this stat, Stockton, it was at a 1.2 for that stat that Pelton made up. And then Garnett and Bryant had tied at a 1.7. Duncan was actually in the neighborhood of Michael Jordan, if I remember right, in terms of the best for championships added, according to Pelton's stat. So second best Hall of Fame class ever. Hard to argue against the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan, and three guys who are on the 92 Dream Team. Makes a lot of sense to me, and certainly a formidable class nonetheless. So that's the first piece of news from the weekend that I think is important to discuss. Elsewhere, additionally, there was a conference call on Saturday between Adam Silver, well, excuse me, between President Donald Trump and the commissioners of virtually every sports league in America. There were roughly a dozen different leagues represented, which of course included Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner. And on that call, it doesn't sound like a whole lot of specifics were at least released to the public, but it sounds like President Trump talked about August and September being when he would expect or want, at least realistically, fans to be back in arenas and stadiums. That, of course, is a little bit later than the timeline that the NBA had reportedly been hoping for of July and perhaps games without fans in June. If that is the case, and clearly this was no like hard and fast, this is the way it's going to happen. But if we don't have fans in arenas until August, perhaps the NBA does play the last few games. You know, I've been saying get everybody to, I think it was 70 games or something like that. So 5 to 7 games per team to get everyone there sometime in July with no fans. And then you play the playoffs in August, shorten all the series, maybe into early September, you know, with 5 game series instead of 7. So I guess, yeah, that would go into September. That could still theoretically work. But that's a little bit of a worrisome timeline for fans of all sports. If Trump, who's been fairly optimistic, I guess is one way of saying his expectation for how this will all shake out related to the coronavirus and sports, August or September sounds like a little bit of an ominous timeline. So hopefully that there was a little bit of under-promising over potentially over-delivering there. Obviously, nobody knows. No one knows exactly what the curve of this virus or how, you know, the health community is going to recommend the leagues proceed, as anything could change over the next month or two. And hopefully we'll have a better sense of what that's going to look like. Additionally, not related directly to that call, but related to testing and quarantining and all that, there was a contingency plan discussed that included quarantining a large number of teams, or I guess in this scenario, it would be all the teams and players to try and get some games played earlier without fans. Unfortunately, there's been some articles out recently about how difficult that would be, just related to all the different services players would need, from trainers to food to, security. It would be such a high number of players for each team that playing games under quarantine would be really difficult to pull off. We talked a little bit previously about how the Big Three Ice Cubes Basketball League is trying to do something similar, but that's actually proving to be difficult, and that's a much lower number of players, you know, 3 players, 5 players per team instead of 13 or 14, and obviously much smaller staffs. So clearly that's going to be a little bit more complicated than what was initially considered. The other note related to the NBA coming back that I think is important to discuss is teams are considering, and the league is considering, the optics of getting players back and then needing to get everybody tested, and still what that's going to look like if all the NBA players, coaches, everybody involved is able to get a test for the coronavirus before some of the members of the general public who perhaps need the tests, and what those optics could look like. The NBA needs to be very careful about how they go about that if there's still people out there looking for a test that can't get one. At this stage, we don't know how fast that'll be. Obviously, testing is much more widespread, much more prevalent now than it was even 2-3 weeks ago. We just don't know. Tests are going to have to reach every corner of this country before the NBA can feel good about itself, you know, trotting players out there who have all been tested before the general public has entirely been tested. So that's just another wrinkle to consider that, frankly, I hadn't really thought about. One last note related to this is the possibility of an NBA horse competition. Of course, the popular trick shot game horse, that's something that came out also at the end of last week, reported by Adrian Wojnarowski. I guess he reported it on Saturday, that the NBA is working with ESPN to find some star players who would do that, probably in their home gyms, putting up shots against people virtually. There's obviously a lot of logistics that would go along with that, but we've also seen the reports of players like Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton, both on the Bucks, who don't have home gyms and are in Milwaukee and can't exactly go out and play on a court when it's cold, or I guess in the middle of a city park without being mobbed by people when they're supposed to be in isolation. So those guys haven't even been shooting. No idea on, like, for instance, any Wolves players who do or don't have home gyms, how many of them got back to their you know, where they're originally from, or like, for instance, if Towns is still in isolation in Minnesota, or if he's with his family on the East Coast, not really sure. Don't know if he's got a court at home. So who knows if any Wolves players would be involved, but certainly an interesting idea. And another way to keep fans kind of plugged in during this time of real uncertainty. All right, that's going to be it in terms of updates. I do want to spend the last couple segments today talking about that 2003-2004 Timberwolves team. Before we get into that, though, I did want to mention our relatively new still friends at Blinkist. Let me tell you about one of the ultimate life hacks. It's hard to find the time to sit down to read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people, like business leaders, are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read, but never had time to. I've read and listened to a couple of books that are on there. The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss is one that actually is a really fun read, and kind of helps wrap your mind around the idea of accomplishing more without working necessarily a lot harder than you need to. And that's one that's on there, one of the featured books that's on Blinkist. With Blinkist, you can get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also receive 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. That's Blinkist.com/NBA. All right, as mentioned off the top of the show, we are going to enter into a relatively brief series about the best seasons in franchise history across the Locked On NBA Network for the respective team-specific podcasts, which means we are going to talk about, of course, the 2003-2004 Timberwolves campaign, the only season in franchise history over 30-plus seasons that the team has actually advanced past the first round of the playoffs. As sad as that is, that, of course, is the season that deserves discussion in Timberwolves history. So, of course, I want to build a little bit of context for anybody who's maybe a newer or younger Timberwolves fan, or just to remind everyone what kind of led into that season. It was the best year in terms of overall regular season wins as well. The previous 7 seasons, the Wolves had made the playoffs and lost in the first round. Remember, the first 7 years of the franchise, the team had never won more than 26 Actually, they won 29 games in their second season. Never won more than 29 games. Flip Saunders was hired midseason in 95-96, which was Kevin Garnett's rookie season. That meant that the 96-97 season, the Wolves went 40-42 and made the playoffs for the first time in franchise history with Flip Saunders as the coach from day one. Kevin Garnett, it was his second season in the NBA, and the Wolves won 40 games, made the playoffs. The following year, 45 games, made the playoffs, lost in the first round again. The next year was the lockout season, 98-99. They went just 25-25, but still squeaked into the playoffs that season. Also lost in the first round. The 99-2000 season, the Wolves won 50 games, lost in the first round. 47 wins in 2000-2001, lost in the first round. 50 wins in 01-02, same story there. And then 51 wins, which to that point was their best season in franchise history, in the 02-03 season, lost in the first round. So I want to take a quick second look at the 02-03 team to kind of set up what that offseason looked like headed into 03-04. The Wolves that season went 51-31. Of course, Kevin Garnett was the best player on that team. This was before the Wolves had their big three, of course, Sam Cassell and Latrell Sprewell, who they would acquire. We'll talk more about those actual acquisitions here in a minute. So you look at the minutes, the guys who played the most minutes on that team. This was Wally Szczerbiak in 02-03 was actually his all-star, it was the season after his all-star season. So when they won 50 games in 01-02, that was Wally Szczerbiak's lone all-star year. He started all 82 games, averaged 38 minutes a game, almost 19 points a game, shot 45.5% on threes. 0203, injuries started to crop up for Wally, and he only played in 52 games, starting 42 of them, still averaged 35 minutes a game, 17.5 points, shot 42% from three. So still an effective player. Still in the games that he played, he was the second highest in terms of minutes average. In terms of minutes played that season because of Zerbiak's injury, the Wolves' second and third, actually the next four players on the list for minutes played, none of them were on the team and playing significant minutes the following year. Troy Hudson was on the team in the 03-04 season, but was more of a fringe player, largely due to injuries, did play in the playoffs, but only appeared in 29 games during the regular season. Hudson got the second most minutes on that 02-03 season, or 02-03 team. Rajon Nesterovic was third in minutes. He was gone before the playoff run in 03-04. Anthony Peeler, gone, and ironically played against the Wolves in the playoffs. Kendall Gill, gone. Wally Zerbiak, a fringe player on that team. Well, fringe is maybe a little bit, undersells it a little, but he certainly was less of an impact player in the 03-04 team, largely due to his injuries. Gary Trent was very much a fringe player, was seventh in minutes on that 02-03 team. Joe Smith, gone, not on the team. Mark Jackson, gone, not on the team. Rod Strickland, same thing. All the way down the rest of that roster, none of those guys were on the 03-04 team. There was a lot of roster turnover. The 02-03 team wasn't a slouch. Again, to that point, the best team in franchise history, 51 wins. They did in the first round. This was when the playoffs had just recently gone to seven games in the first round. Took the Lakers to six games and lost to the LA Lakers in 2003. That Lakers team did actually lose in the second round to the Spurs, and they were themselves just a 50-win team. So that year, the Wolves did lose in six games in the first round. In between the two seasons, the Wolves clearly identified that they needed to find some offensive players that could shoulder more of the load than what had been done in the past. Wally Zerbiak was the one holdover. There was hope that he would stay healthy that season. That didn't exactly happen. The Wolves in 03-04 ended up winning 58 games, and that was largely due to the massive roster overturn, or turnover, I should say. Again, a couple of those guys, Troy Hudson, Gary Trent, they were still on the team, but they had their roles drastically shifted, and they were much less involved heading into the season. So what I'm going to do is I want to walk through the various offseason moves that were actually made, and then talk through what roles each of those players had. That'll be today's show. And then moving forward, we'll go through the full season, the story of the season, some of the injuries that happened, and what that timeline looked like before getting to actually breaking down the playoff series. So next up here, I want to go through the offseason of 2003, what Saunders and McHale did to make this roster seven wins better over the course of one summer. Okay, so I rattled off the top minutes getters from the 02-03 season, but I think to really kind of comprehend that, we need to talk about that in comparison directly with the 03-04 season. So I talked about some of those guys not being involved at all. Remember, number two, Troy Hudson, in that 03-04 season, Troy Hudson was number 12 in minutes because of his injuries. Rajon Nesterovic was gone. He was number three in 02-03. Peeler, number four, gone. Kendall Gill, five, gone. Wally Zerbiak was sixth in 02-03 in minutes. He was 10th. In 03-04, again, due to injuries. Gary Trent was 7th in minutes in 02-03. Gary Trent was 7th in minutes again in 03-04. And his role really diminished as the season went on. The Wolves added Oliver Miller partway through the season when Michael Olowokandi got hurt. And Miller was every bit of a part of the fringe of the rotation as Gary Trent. I suppose down the stretch he played a little less, but both guys were involved, and that really cut into Gary Trent's minutes, and that was his final season. Joe Smith, 8. Mark Jackson, 9. Rod Strickland, 10. Those guys were all gone and were replaced with the likes of Mark Madsen, Irvin Johnson. Those are the guys that got a lot of those minutes in 03-04 for the Timberwolves. So, again, side by side. And look at the 03-04 team. Garnett led the team in minutes played, followed by Latrell Sprewell, Sam Cassell, Trent Hassel, Fred Hoiberg, Mark Madsen. So numbers 2 through 6 in terms of overall minutes played for that team in 2003-2004 were brand new to the team, as well as numbers 8, 9, 11. So in the top 12, you only had four guys who maintained their spots in the top 12 in minutes from the 02-03 season to 03-04. That was Garnett, it was Gary Trent, Wally Zerbiak, and Troy Hudson were the only guys who were holdovers. And again, because of injuries, in a lot of cases, those roles shifted quite a bit. All right. So in the offseason of 2003, the Wolves, following the season 02-03, when they took the Lakers to six games after winning 51, they made a few moves. They waived Igor Rakosevic, who, of course, is a former, I think, second-round draft pick by the Wolves. Didn't really do much in the pros. The Wolves drafted Indy Eby and Rick Rickert. Rickert played overseas, never really did much. He came stateside for training camp, but never really did anything in the NBA. Indy Eby didn't really either. He was a first-round pick out of high school that season for the Wolves. Then they traded they traded Joe Smith and Anthony Peeler to the Bucks to land Sam Cassell and Irvin Johnson. We talked about this in our top 20 players in Timberwolves history episode as well, just last week, or perhaps this was the end of the week before. But this was a huge deal for the Wolves to trade a couple of kind of fringe rotation guys, Joe Smith and Anthony Peeler, for a borderline star in Sam Cassell at the time, and then another fringe rotation type guy, Irvin Johnson. Getting Johnson over Joe Smith really just helped in the size category. It was a little bit of a downgrade from maybe an all-around impact, but Johnson was a guy who was going to know his role and also have the size to more effectively take on the Shaqs and the Vlade Divacs of the world in the Western Conference, and that's only two of the, you know, obviously Tim Duncan, tons of big men in the West that you just had to deal with every year. And the idea with Irvin Johnson is, because he had a little bit more size than Joe Smith, he would be a better fit for what the Wolves were trying to do. So while he was the worst of the four players in the deal overall, his size kind of helped pad that deal. So essentially you're trading Joe Smith for Irvin Johnson. Anthony Peeler, who was only a three-point specialist, and well, he was a good three-point shooter and unfortunately the most prolific in Timberwolves history until just this past season in terms of three-pointers made. He wasn't a completely knockdown, you know, sharpshooter. He wasn't J.J. Redick exactly, or even Wally Szczerbiak for that matter, and didn't really provide much else. So the Wolves traded Peeler. They got Sam Cassell. Sam Cassell was coming off of, I mean, he'd been a strong player for most of his career. He'd won a couple of championships early in his career with the Houston Rockets. He was coming off of a couple of strong seasons where he averaged nearly 20 points a game for the Bucks, was a 36% three-point shooter. Hadn't been an all-star ever in his career, but was kind of a borderline star at that point anyways. The Wolves were going to be losing Terrell Brandon due to injury and knew that they needed to shore up the point guard spot. They did that. They got Sam Cassell going into his age 34 season. For the Wolves that year, he averaged 19.8 points per game, which was a career high, 7.3 assists, which was the third best mark in his career. And he shot at that time, a career best 39.8%, and actually it ended up being a career best 39.8% from beyond the arc that season for the Timberwolves. So he did have an unexpected career year in his age 34 season for the Wolves. At the time, this was seen as a really savvy move for the Timberwolves, but I don't think anybody knew that it was going to be quite the steal that it ended up being. To be able to get Cassell and then your starting center and Irvin Johnson for Joe Smith and Anthony Peeler was quite the steal. So that was a significant move for the Wolves. They also traded Terrell Brandon, who at that point was injured, and Mark Jackson were the only players outgoing for the Wolves. No draft picks, and a four-team deal that included the 76ers, Hawks, and Knicks. There were a couple of picks exchanged elsewhere. Keith Van Horn was one of the bigger names moved. But the Wolves only had to give up an injured Terrell Brandon and Mark Jackson. They made the salaries match to take on Latrell Sprewell's relatively large deal. And they got a couple of years of Sprewell before his career actually flamed out in, as you may remember, a contract dispute. But at any rate, to get Sprewell for virtually nothing, essentially expiring contracts, was an extremely savvy move by Kevin McHale. The fact that the Wolves went so long without being able to pull off significant trades and free agency signings to really support Garnett, and then were able to pull off essentially two coups in one offseason, is remarkable. The stars really aligned in terms of being able to shuffle some cap space and to land these borderline stars to surround Garnett with. And at the time, remember, Cassell is going into his age 34 season. So the idea is that they're getting a guy who was never an all-star that's kind of on the back end of his career, not knowing he would actually have the best year of his career. And then you're bringing in Latrell Sprewell, who was going into his age 33 season. So a couple of guys who are theoretically out of their primes, not just on the backside of their prime, but out of their prime. And yet those two guys, Cassell certainly had the best year of his career. Sprewell was certainly past his prime as a scorer. He was a past four-time All-Star. It had been 3 years since he'd made an All-Star team with the Knicks. But he was still a guy who was potent with the ball in his hands, could cut, could shoot a little bit, shoot enough at least, had shot 37% the year prior in New York. So the Wolves to acquire two guys who could take some of the scoring load off of Garnett and had playoff experience, had finals experience, was a big move for the Timberwolves. And to do all that for virtually nothing was really impressive. They also let Roshan Osterovic go to San Antonio in free agency, picked up Michael Olowokandi on a three-year, $16 million deal. At the time, he was considered one of the better up-and-coming back-to-the-basket type centers in the league. A curious fit next to Garnett in some ways, but at the time, again, more big bodies to compete with Shaq and Divac and David Robinson and Tim Duncan and everybody made some sense. Ultimately, he lost the starting job, partly due to injury, and Irvin Johnson ended up being the starter down the stretch, but Olowokandi was still a fairly big part of that team. The Wolves also picked up Mark Madsen for a minimum contract, Fred Hoiberg on a modest deal to add some shooting that they lost when they moved Anthony Peeler. And that was really how they filled out the rest of the rotation. They did end up bringing back Gary Trent to kind of pick up some of those minutes at the back end of the rotation as well. And so that maintained a little bit of roster continuity from year to year for the Wolves. But ultimately, in that big, that was just a really active offseason, losing Anthony Peeler, gaining the shooting back in Fred Hoiberg, trading out Joe Smith, bringing in Irvin Johnson, Michael Olowokandi, losing Roshan Osterovic, just so many things that shifted for the Timberwolves, but ultimately for the better. The roster definitely improved. They didn't give up much to get Sprewell and Cassell, and this became a really potent roster that ultimately improved 7 wins in the regular season from 51 wins the year prior to 58 in the 03-04 season. What I'd like to do the rest of this week is go through the regular season, kind of the saga of injuries that happened. This was also Kevin Garnett's MVP season. He was really kind of the runaway MVP that year. So we'll talk through his campaign specifically, what the Wolves rotation looked like, how it evolved throughout the year. And then also eventually we'll get to the playoff run here at the end of the week and talk through what that looked like when it was all said and done, and the journey through the playoffs, the ups and downs, and how things ultimately ended in the conference finals as well. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of our brand new podcast, Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.